the end of CLEAR, the Expedited Airport Security Program. What went wrong? Can it be fixed? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is a frequent guest. Bob Poole is the Director of Transportation Studies and, in fact, the founder of the Reason Foundation, which is a think tank dedicated to free market principles. Bob often comes down on the side of issues very differently from both some of our listeners and, more specifically, many of the alphabet groups that advocate for general aviation. And we're here to talk today, though, about something to do with the airlines. Bob, thanks for taking some time out for our listeners.
Glad to be back, Paul.
Bob, let's talk about something that was not in your current edition of ATC Reform News, and that is a news story that that broke about a week ago about the CLEAR Expedited Security Clearance Program, which was running in 18 airports, has been shut down. I note that it was shut down very suddenly, and as is often the case with airlines that cease operations, CLEAR continued charging customer credit cards on file renewal fees right up until the eve of its shutdown.
Yes, including me about a week before. I renewed for 2 years, believe it or not.
Oh.
They give me a very good deal. So.
Well,
I guess that money is down the drain.
Well, I don't know. Can you call your credit card company and get that reversed?
Well, that's a possibility.
Well, I've heard a lot of people talking about that.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about this because it has been your contention all along that these expedited security clearance programs have never been allowed to become what they were advertised
as.
That's correct. And also it was never allowed to become what the basic business plan of these companies involved counted on.
Exactly. When Congress in 2001, after 9/11, passed the Aviation and Transportation Security Act, one of the things in that act says that this new agency, TSA, should create and allow to move forward a risk-based program by which we can, in looking for the needle in the haystack of people that we need to, you know, inspect before they get on planes, if we can shrink the size of the haystack by having what they call then a trusted traveler program. That's what should be done. And so the idea was that people could sign up, have a background check, and then they'd get a biometric identity card, and then when they showed up at the airport, they wouldn't have to go through the same degree of TSA scrutiny each and every time because they would have been cleared in advance. The analogy was if somebody has a secret clearance from the government, why on earth would we put them through all that security? They're trusted with, national defense secrets. And so by analogy, if we could clear other people, give them a certain kind of clearance sufficient for letting them get on planes without detailed inspection, this would save a lot of time for those people, but it would also help the TSA to allocate its resources where it really should, on the people that they either don't know anything about or have reason to suspect might be bad guys.
Now, freeing up resources to be used for the real mission at hand would seem to be in the best interest of TSA as well.
But it appears that all along there were two factions in TSA. I mean, this has never been said publicly, but a faction that thought the idea made sense, or at least within the Department of Homeland Security, which is the parent of TSA, because the other parts of the Customs and Border Protection part of Homeland Security has implemented these clearance programs whereby air travelers returning from abroad, if they've passed a background check and given some biometrics, they can bypass. They don't have to speak to an immigration official. They can just go to a kiosk, put their card in, put their fingerprint on the thing, and they're in. That's it. And that's a risk-based program that guards our borders at airports, at major international airports in the United States. And that's analogous, you know, in many ways to what registered traveler or trusted traveler was supposed to be. So TSA said, okay, we're going to try a pilot of this registered traveler program and allow private sector vendors to set up and do it. And the company, Verified Identity Pass, that created CLEAR and became the biggest operator with 250,000 signed-up members, including me, and alas, went forward on the basis with a business plan assuming that their members not only would get a short line, but would get less hassle at the checkpoint, that they would not have to take their shoes off and their jackets off and take their laptops out, but because they'd been cleared in advance and, you know, judged to be low-risk people, they'd be able to have at least something as minimal as what was in place before 9/11. And my strong hypothesis is why CLEAR didn't sign up more people than it did, and why it was apparently having trouble getting people to renew, was that it never was able to offer the really expedited screening through security.
Although apparently it did take in $52 million in subscription fees, and it seems kind of amazing to me that that wasn't enough to keep it afloat.
Yes, well, nobody has seen their books. My own experience, Paul, in using the CLEAR card a number of times in Washington and a few times in Orlando and at New York once or twice, is that whenever I used it, there was never a lot, you know, the CLEAR employees were standing around waiting for somebody to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And so they may have had high operating costs premised on a much larger volume of passengers. And, you know, they had the cost. Once they announced they were open at an airport, they had to have the lanes open during all the hours when flights occurred and pay those staff, even if not very many people actually showed up, as opposed to having bought a membership.
Talking with Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation, more on the end of the CLEAR program in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits. That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking with Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation about the demise of the CLEAR program earlier this week and how a lack of buy-in by the TSA was part of the reason it failed. Bob, I guess I have to ask, I can understand why the FBI and the CIA might not have wanted the extra workload, but what was driving the faction within TSA that didn't want this?
The faction within TSA were just afraid that the program wouldn't be foolproof, that people without a criminal record could be sleeper agents and pass as ordinary business people, frequent travelers, and get a membership, pass the background test, and then plan to go through less stringent security with some kind of chemicals or weapons or something that they wouldn't be able to stop. What I pointed out for the past year is that there's a real double standard at work there within TSA, because for airport employees, hundreds of thousands, many hundreds of thousands of airport employees who have access to the secure areas on airports, they have to pass an FBI criminal history background check and submit fingerprints for that purpose, and that's it. Then they get a badge that says they have unescorted access, and they can be on the ramp and have access to the cargo hold, if they're mechanics, they have access to inside the planes. and they could easily they could be sleeper agents too.
Mm-hmm.
So the TSA has a real double standard there in saying what's good enough for people with access to planes in the course of their everyday work on airport sites is not sufficient to protect airlines from passengers who might be sleeper agents.
Now,
so we've got a real contradiction there.
You follow these things closely in terms of how they're going over in Washington. Do you sense any sentiment to try to turn this around and bring this back?
As a matter of fact, the House just recently, a week or two ago, passed the first ever TSA reauthorization bill, and there's specific language in that bill. The Senate has not acted yet. That calls upon TSA to go back to the original language of the 2001 Aviation Transportation Security Act and turn the registered traveler program into what it was supposed to be, a risk-based program that refocuses TSA's resources away from the pre-cleared travelers in that program and onto higher-risk travelers.
You know, we've seen in the past few days, Bob, a couple of stories come across about things happening at airports now that suggest TSA is kind of on a hair trigger. We've seen a guy arrested in an airport who was a Dallas newspaper photographer who was handcuffed at gunpoint because he was taking pictures of a B-24 giving rides on Father's Day. We've had somebody who was just making a routine flight from Mexico into Long Beach, and again, guns drawn by Customs and Border Patrol and local law enforcement when they got to the ramp. I would have thought by now, maybe I had too much faith in the nature of our system, but I would have thought by now that there'd be enough outcry and people going, what have we done? Do you sense
maybe in creating TSA and giving it the kind of power that it has?
Well, not necessarily in creating TSA, but in not in waking up to the abuses that appear to be happening.
Yes. No, I'm surprised too. I mean, I think as a nation, air travelers and even most private pilots, I think, have become too passive, too accepting of an agency that has more power than I think anyone realized it was going to be having. And that troubles me as someone who's interested in liberty. There are always trade-offs in these sorts of things. While we certainly want to protect aviation from terrorist threats, at the same time, we don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater.
All right, Bob. Well, we really appreciate your often alternative opinion to what we hear within the general aviation community. And thanks for taking some time out for our listeners.
Always glad to do so, Paul.
Bob Poole is the founder and director of transportation studies for the Reason Foundation. You can find out more at www.reason.org. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.